spend more money than you can spend in a day. And the talk in the presentation was trying to suggest that they're going to preserve one of the old patch neighborhoods and build over others, including the people who have the misfortune of living behind the La Bahia complex. They're going to keep that looking sort of like it is in the front, but build it into essentially a five-level convention or conference center or something. They talked a little bit about having parking buildings like we have downtown now with little shops on the side, but they didn't talk about any kind of shops that would serve the neighbors, the people who live there. They talk like most of the people would still live there or be given better housing, but then after the presentations were made to the city council, Mike Rodkin made the very clear statement that this is all the imagination of the developers, that there aren't any dollars yet for this more housing they speak of. They don't have the money even for the part of the boardwalk that they wanted to preserve and restore, which is the little cottages down by what is now the biggest parking lot along the river mouth, let alone any individual new apartments or home. The plan does kind of suggest that somehow there will be housing over in the south of Laurel area for people who live further in the south at Beach Hill. But there isn't any plan tied to any real money or resources. That was articulated very bluntly, I thought.
Well, you live yourself in the south of Laurel area on Canfield Street, right?
I live on what the city calls the Lower Ocean neighborhood. The south of Laurel is over there where they burnt down the depot recently.
That's the other side of the river, right?
Yeah, flatland between Washington Street and the railroad track, or say toward the beach of the new Neri Lagoon area.
Has this discussion around the Seaside Company had much impact in your neighborhood?
I don't think the discussion has, but if what unfolds is anything like the discussion that's going on between the city council and these experts and developers, it's going to impact this neighborhood. We already have a seriously impacted parking problem. And I just see... Have you ever been on Ocean Street on a weekend in the summer, or on a three-day weekend?
It's a slow going.
Yeah, if your car can make it at all. Well, imagine four times the traffic. I don't even know how to articulate, in terms of the traffic alone, how bad that would be for this neighborhood.
And have people from the neighborhood spoken to city council members about this potential impact?
Yes, some of us have, and I understand more people are getting a little organized. And several of the council members expressed concern also that, they didn't want to see this neighborhood more messed up when they've been trying to do work to make this more of a neighborhood.
Which council member?
Hernandez was the one who first spoke of it that night. This big snow was being presented to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. I heard a couple council members talking about it at a subsequent meeting.
How about potential city council candidate Derek Larson of the Resource Center for Maine Violence, which is located in your neighborhood?
I didn't know he was still thinking of running for city council. He seems to have his hands full right here in the neighborhood. But he's been part of one of several teams, the Santa Cruz Action Network Steering Committee gals, part of another team, who have been talking to people in the flats about what the law really says when it comes to being relocated. There's like several different groups doing their own public outreach there.
So what you're saying, perhaps, and don't like the words in your mouth, but are you saying that the supposed guarantees or offers or promises that those folks relocated by this new Seaside Company rezoning that gives them much more parking lot space, I guess, and changes from residential to residential business or something, commercial, is not in fact in any way guaranteed, but in fact is sort of highly hypothetical at the moment?
I can't really give you a firm answer on that, Robert. This is what I think pertaining to that. The city is actively negotiating with Canfield and his developers they feel that Canfield will pay for certain concessions.
Canfield is, of course, the owner of the Seaside Company?
One of the owners of the Seaside Company, and the wharf, well, I guess the city owns a wharf now, and some of the other businesses along Beach Street. And one of the few significant employers of young people in our city, by the way, to put a little spin on the other side, he has a lot of supporters here. But what I heard sitting through that whole presentation and not falling asleep once is that the city can require Canfield to pay for the cost that the city's going to incur because of all of this boardwalk monopoly expansion, along with his own cost. You know, in other words, he'd have to pay a little more than, say, a downtown merchant has to pay. They have these big fees for parking for their employees, in addition to that and stuff, that kind of thing. The Seaside Company and Charles Canfield would have to do that kind of thing to in a more significant level than has been done before here. But meanwhile, the lot's nice and empty. You know, unless there's a very active campaign, not just to warn the current neighbors in the beachfront, but to go out in the populated parts of the state and find the nonprofit developers and the specialized kinds of not-for-profit banks that will build housing that people can afford, people who work here can afford.
What's happening with low-income housing in your neighborhood, what do you call your neighborhood?
The city calls it the Lower Ocean Street neighborhood. It used to be part of the east side.
I see.
But I think for purposes of census and funding, because there's so many unmet needs in this neighborhood, they've broken it down to call it its own thing.
Well, I understand. I think you spoke to me before about, funding going to put up lots of nice fences and grills around and enable landlords to gentrify their property, but not essentially having an ironically opposite effect, so that now rents are higher and there's less available low-income housing there. What's the story?
That's my position. This is what I see in my neighborhood in the Lower Ocean Street area, is where developers have been giving these bonuses and extra deadlines and stuff. They've used it to spruce up their places, often because they've been taken to court. And this is part of the good work of Eric Larson and some other of my neighbors. They've been taken to court for allowing drug dealing on their property. And then, to deal with that, they've been given these incentives by the city to make the property safe. And then, they raise the rent. If they rent. There's also this other situation that you know something about on Campbell Street, where the slumlords were so blatant that they decided rather than comply with the city's rules for safety, they'll just never build again. So that lot sits empty, while two doors down would turn the little cottage on the corner into something like 8 high-class, expensive units.
Is it the same slumlord?
No, it's a different property.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, you know, you get the feeling, living here, that there's no plan. If there's a housing...
Free enterprise, my dear.
Yeah. You really get the first with the most money.
Campbell Street, of course, was the site of was an early location where free radio was located. And indeed, folks living there were actually carried out by the police because the city and the landlord refused to provide relocation funding, which the folks were demanding, and they were sitting in for that purpose, and in fact, later on, Judge Stevens ruled they were entitled to those relocation funds, and so their action was vindicated, but I believe some of them suffered criminal penalties.
Well, meanwhile, families are blown apart, they've had to leave town in order to get any housing.
Well, let's shift now from, unless there's more you want to say about the beach flats and Seaside, is there more you want to say about
well,
that?
Well, just the Campbell Street house is a good example of the fact that if you take a look at these things in context, instead of waiting until it hits the Quantstrom headlines or whatever, you get a very different picture.
Yeah, the headlines, of course, talked about human feces or human urine.
They make the railroads sound like good guys, and everybody in this net, good people, you know, everybody here knows those were lies. Anybody that knew anybody in Campbell's house for a 7 or 8 year period prior to that incident know that the landlords didn't take care of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys came to me when I was working as a case manager up in Broadway to find out how to get trash off the property because the landlord wouldn't cooperate or even return their calls, which I gave them a good idea for.
Unfortunately, that story did not come out in Karen Clark's Santa Cruz County Sentinel articles at that time.
It didn't come out anyway. Everybody demonized the tenants, and nobody took a look at what was going on and how long it had been going on with the landlord.
Everyone except Free Radio Santa Cruz and Baffled Spears Broadsides, I would like to state at this point. Now, let me ask you this. We've heard some controversy between Doug Land and Eric Larson, both working for the Resource Center for Nonviolence, around a grant from the police department.
I read the Metro News version of that.
Would you like to give us your, any perspective on that you want to share with our audience?
I don't think it's radio. These two people, it's hard for me to imagine they ever worked together, but they're both familiar acquaintances of mine. And one of them's a lawyer.
There are some of us who, having seen Michael Hernandez step up from his pro-police position on the Citizens Police Review Board to being the most, the most dumbo city council member around, I suppose a couple of, I've rooted him on a couple of things, and mostly he just sounds completely off the wall or inarticulate, or his positions just mirror those of the police chief.
Well, I'm glad to hear the police chief has positions.
he acts like he does, although they seem to have sometimes little basis, for example, in the matter of the closing the riverfront or the youth curfew is too much.
Yeah, I don't have any
John
beef against
case,
Belcher, by the way.
Sorry?
I don't have any major beef against Belcher myself. I just don't see signs of policy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I have a number of beefs, but that's not really relevant. What's relevant? I was going to ask you again about this, the position of the Resource Center for Nonviolence taking money. Do you have any thoughts about that from the police department? Is it is good? Is it bad? Does it concern us?
From the Justice Department, the federal government, to use so they can mingle with the police. I think that's what the paper said.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the situation you mean?
What's your view of it?
The thing about being friendly with police has been kind of a provocative thing in our neighborhood because we seem to have a choice between being overly policed and or overly indulging people who want to sell drugs to, you know, through car windows, as if this were a drug or a restaurant. And I guess I don't have a very strong position either way. I'm not afraid to let a policeman in my house, although the next time they knock on my door, they better have the right papers in order. This past year.
I remember you were the object of phony charges by Kitten Reynolds.
No, that's since I don't know if the charges were phony or just retarded.
As I understand, Reynolds herself had stolen property that she stored in your car from the City Hall's area, some plaques, and then she claimed that they were yours.
She
led the police to your
car. She told police that I was some sort of hiding place for numerous homeless people's goods, and some were stolen.
This is around, of course, the case of Miguel Balderas, who was held in jail for 2 months last summer for allegedly offering the City Hall sleepers break-in.
This was what I get for offering somebody a cup of tea and a couple of
snacks. The witness, of course, was this woman who you were befriending, Kitten Reynolds, who's back in town speaking regularly at city council meetings and apparently quite chummy with the police department. I'm only mentioning this because I think the history of what's gone on is important for us all to be aware of, and that doesn't necessarily vitiate her opinion on other issues.
None of us should be judged by a behavior.
It doesn't mean that people can't change, but I think that one has to look first at past behavior, just as one has to consider that Miguel Balderas engaged in theft at the house of Jim Costner, I guess, 3 or 4 months ago, and I guess now he's in jail. He was in jail on a felony assault charge and was recently released. I don't know the merits of that charge. I do know that, as far as many of us are concerned, he is still a thief. Steals from his friends in the activist community and hasn't got answers to that. And I don't mind saying so publicly here on the radio. I think that has to be known. On the other hand, if he calls in with a report about homeless rights matters, I'd be happy to take it, as I did when he reported he was a witness to a body
washing up on the beach several months ago.
He was the person that saw it?
He was one of them, I guess.
So
I want to thank you, Linda. Do you have any announcements that you want to make here on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
No, I don't have any big announcements. I think that the more dialogue about the role of the police and agents of the state in our communities, to the extent we have communities, is important. Keep up your vision.
Thanks a lot, Linda Lemasker of Housing Now in Santa Cruz and many other groups concerned with the rights of low-income women, men, and children.
All right.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
Really want to know 1948? I got life, mother. I got life, sister. I got freedom, brother. I got good times, man. I got crazy ways, daughter. I got $1 million charm, cousin. I got headaches and toothaches and bad times too. Life. I got my hair, I got my head, I got my brain, I got my ears, I got my eyes, I got my nose, I got my mouth. I got my teeth, I got my tongue, I got my chin, I got my neck, I got my teeth, I got my heart, I got my soul, I got my mind, I got my hair. I got my hands, I got my legs, I got my fingers, I got my legs, I got my feet, I got my toes, I got my hips, I got my blood, I got my life, brother, I got that, sister, I got freedom, brother, I got good times, if I'm man, I got this way, daughter, I got dreams about a child, cousin, I got headaches,
February 27, 1998, it's about 2:15, we're talking to
Clarence Smithy, because I showed a friend and gave a friend that had a new baby, his wife had a new baby, and I gave him some crystals the night before, and one of the hosts happened to see me with a box open giving him, not selling, some stones for his new baby. The next morning, one of the officers stopped me and confiscated my box because he said I had it open for sale the night before, and I have yet to get it back from him.
Which officer?
The Oriental gentleman that's the community service officer.
When did this happen?
Well, it's been about 2 weeks now.
Where did it happen?
In front of New Leaf. They said that when I got a job working for someone selling stones and could prove I had a job, they would give me my property back.
This is preposterous.
They totally stole it.
Would you like me to try to get your property back?
It wouldn't hurt. It's worth a few $100, and I'm out it right now at the moment.
Okay, would you like to be on my radio show to talk about this on Sunday?
We'll discuss it between...
And he, of course, is on the air, and that seems to be happening on the mall, as well as seizures of shopping carts, harassment of people at bus stops, and your occasional shooting in the belly for allegedly brandishing a weapon. You've got this business of seizing people's merchandise, their artwork even, down in the mall, as happened to the man you just heard this interview with. Haven't yet taken it any further. We'll see what happens. Sometimes you get a positive response from the police department on an individual case basis. For instance, a man who whose bicycle was taken by an officer, allegedly to, I guess it was by Officer Northrop. A man's bicycle was taken because he had some outstanding tickets for bicycling the wrong way. They said they could either take him to jail on a warrant or confiscate his bicycle, and which isn't true. They can take you to jail on warrants, but they can't confiscate your property as some sort of punishment. That's way out of line, and when I wrote a letter to the police chief about it, he upheld the that was a wrong position. We also got fast action from the police department in that instance. Sergeant Vogel and Lieutenant Habe, who played such a nasty role in the City Hall Sleepers protest in March of 1996 that we even actually composed a song about him called Maybe Habe, which we'll play for you at some future time. He actually took a positive role in this and saw that this man immediately got his bicycle back. But again, these are individual cases, and unfortunately, the policies of harassment of poor people downtown seems to be the norm and continuing, and we hope to, we really need broad, the broad kind of response against it that can come, for instance, by folks coming to City Council around other issues that are equally important, like the Pelton Street Homeless Garden Project, and sweeping this reactionary city council majority out of power. That's what we need to do. And hopefully that is what we will do. Some attorneys are involved in this struggle. We're going to hear from one now.
Well, Attorney Catnip Kate Wells, recently renowned in the Sentinel for, what did you get, some kind of award?
I got the Pro Bono Attorney of the Year for 1997.
Pro Bono Attorney of the Year. We won't go into an analysis of your record at this time, Catnip Kate Wells. However, we'll ask you about the Cannabis Club. What's going on? We understand the feds have moved in, and what's the status of the feds' attempt to crush local cannabis clubs? I guess they're proceeding civilly against them? What's the story?
Yes, they have proceeded with a civil... Well, I don't consider them very civil, but the law considers it a civil injunction, which means they're trying to get the clubs shut down as violating the Controlled Substances Act, the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which still laughably lists marijuana as a Schedule I drug along with heroin and other dastardly drugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, nicotine is being hawked to babies at 7-Eleven stores.
And that's precisely the point. And so, at this point, they have not shut any clubs down. They have come after six different clubs all over Northern California.
And Dennis Perone faces criminal prosecution up in San Francisco, correct?
He's facing state prosecution. That's an entirely different case.
It is because of his work with a cannabis club, correct?
That's correct, but he's being prosecuted under state law as well as he's part of the federal injunction.
However, he is running for governor and actually has been a key force in fighting for the decriminalization of marijuana both on a medical level and generally.
That's correct, and that's what's gotten him into trouble, that generally part. the state investigation has uncovered the fact that he has not been necessarily abiding by the rules of...
What about your club? Are you? I know that I saw Fred Psyche in tears before the city council. He's, of course, the head of the local cannabis club.
That's correct. He is a member and as well of the cannabis club.
He's a patient. He has a medical condition which requires use of medical marijuana. How many people in the club now?
We have about 500 active members. That's people with active doctors' recommendations or what we call prescriptions, but recommendations under the law, and about probably 150 to 200 of those are active.
Now, has there been a cutback in the number of patients that have been taken by the Cannabis Club because of these new of this new federal action?
Actually, we did stop taking new members for a short period of time while we purged her files, because we learned in receiving this federal action that we had in fact been infiltrated by federal DEA agents. These agents came into our clubs and with false letters from doctors stating false medical conditions. They had been so kindly provided with not only valid California driver's licenses, but also their doctor, their quote-unquote doctor, had been provided with a California Medical Board number. We, of course, know who provided them with that. It would be our esteemed Attorney General Dan Lundgren, who finally figured out that he was shooting himself in the political foot to continue to go after the club, so he has handed us over to the feds on a silver platter, including taking part in a criminal conspiracy to infiltrate the clubs and obtain marijuana under false pretenses.
So, is that purging resulted in numerous people being, should we say, denied services by the club?
No, actually it hasn't. We just wanted to find out if we had any other, recovering from the flu. We just wanted to find out if there had been any other, in fact, doctors, or that we were calling all the doctors to make sure that each one of these people were valid. And when these federal agents came, we would call to verify with their doctor, and unbeknownst to us, we would receive the doctor who was receiving our call was a DEA agent in the DEA office in San Francisco, who said, oh yes, this is our patient, and oh yes, he has AIDS or whatever the condition was.
Now, what's going to happen there? Is there a court date coming up where folks are going to show up, a showdown, so to speak?
Yes, we have all been consolidated into one court, and that's Judge Breyer's court in San Francisco. We handed in our opposition papers just this last Friday, an exhaustive tome. We think we have a real good chance at beating this. And the hearing on the matter is March 24th at 2:30 in the federal courthouse in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
So y'all come.
Is there going to be a caravan up there? Are you planning a...
There is a rally planned before the event. And we're also asking for legal donations, because most everybody, all of the attorneys for the clubs, have been donating their time, which it's been just an exhaustive amount of work to overcome the federal
funny business.
Well, they have pretty much unlimited resources on their side, so it's tough. We've had to all try to coordinate. I've been traveling up to Oakland on a regular basis to meet with the other attorneys trying to get this thing...
Are you getting paid for this, Kate?
No.
This is all pro bono. What about all those big dope dealers in Northern California? Why aren't they fronting this?
Well, see, they're the ones that are going to benefit from the fact that they're going to close down the clubs. You don't understand. See, that's...
Well, let me ask you that. Hasn't there been donations from dope dealers to the clubs who are concerned about, their marijuana getting into the hands of people who need it?
Oh, well, certainly there have been, an outreach by those socially conscious.
But the story about the dope dealers and the cannabis club will have to wait till the next issue of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We are out of time. I want to thank you for being with us and invite you to tune in again 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. Also, if you're interested in the situation with medical marijuana, get up to campus. Kresge Town Hall at 8 o'clock, as we speak, has Dennis Perone speaking more on that issue. He's the gubernatorial candidate, which I think we can all support. I certainly support him. You should also support Uncle Dennis here, who's next up on the Earth First two-hour show, coming right down the pike. We're going to go out on a selection by Hair, which hopefully will be appropriate. Both of us are on...
Hirsute,
or whatever you will. Yes, Dennis. If you have any questions about the show or phone numbers from the show that you want, please give me a call at 423-HUFF. I'll be at that number for the next hour. And in the meantime, stay with us and stay hairy or bald, as the case may be, but stay active.
I'm just a hairy guy. I'm hairy. Hair, that's a fright. Don't ask me why, don't know. It's not for lack of bread, like the grateful dead.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, Bathrobe Spears, Broadsides. Your civil rights and mine, especially if you're poor or on the streets. Stay with us. 2.5 hours of fun and games and real serious stuff.
Thank you.
you touch and you feel no shame, and you steal away from the city, and lightning fills your veins. Then in an unconditioned office, the committee discusses your case. And all the words you whispered, they felt the flush upon your face. They are powers and every fancy, who's on top and who's below. You have crossed into the shadow place, where our laws freely roam.
A couple of guitars have gotten tickets in the last while, and they're still attempting to use the guidelines developed by the Street Performers Guild, which say that people should probably move out in an hour or so, but they're using these guidelines as hard and fast rules, and they're telling people they can't stand in alcoves when it's raining and play guitar, and they're basically being jerks as usual about the whole performing on the streets situation.
And that's the update downtown on the Santa Cruz one-time garden mall. I'm your host, Bathrobes P.R. Robert Norris. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. Every Sunday, it's me from 11 to 1:30 with a whole panoply of guests, bits of music from the late 70s and early 80s, and a few surprises, talking about civil rights in and around Santa Cruz, particularly for folks who are homeless and poor. My name is Robert Norris. I call myself Bathrobes Pierre because on occasion I wear a bathrobe, usually at demonstrations where folks are protesting the right to be free from laws that penalize homeless people simply for being homeless. Particularly in Santa Cruz, we have a law called the sleeping ban, which makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. Hopefully a law that will be changed at the next election if we can get enough signatures on the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban. Currently making the rounds downtown. If you see it, sign it. And if you want help with it, because we need lots of folks to circulate that petition, and if you want to help and give a call to the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, you can reach any of the two organizers. Becky Johnson's one of them. She's at 429-8529. David Silva's another. He's at 429-5284 for help with circulating this petition to change the law in Santa Cruz that makes it currently illegal for folks to sleep in their vehicles or outside, so that there should be at least some legal places for people to sleep. More about that later. In the studio with us, we have
Zena.
Hi, Zena.
Hi.
And Zena, you are currently homeless?
Yes. I'm staying at the shelter.
That's the River Street shelter?
Right.
And you were going to kind of give us a number of your experiences around being homeless recently and to discuss, well, you had some rather interesting things to tell me that I thought you could possibly share with folks out there.
Sure. Well, I had had a place to stay for a little while. It was supposed to be a child care exchange job, and was asked to leave. I had about an hour one evening when it was raining, and I was out there with one bag and nowhere to go. Too late to go to the shelter, too late to go to the armory. So I headed downtown, and I hung out at the bookstore for a while, and then they closed. And then I went across the street over around the corner from the vet's hall and thought I'd just sit, and, you know, it wasn't raining too hard at the time, but just wanted a quiet place to sit where I wouldn't be bothered. And I saw a gate that was open, and there was a dumpster, and I thought, that's a good place behind that little dumpster. You know, I'm not hurting anything. It's not anybody's valuable property that I might be, you know, considered a threat to. I'll just go sit there and get some space and sit. And I had some cookies with me. I thought I'd eat the cookies. So I'm sitting there, and a car pulls up. Bright lights shine on the dumpster, and a police officer gets out and comes out and says, you have to come out from there. And I come out from there with my bag, and I had a stick with me, short stick, and he asked me to be careful with the stick. I tend to use it for carrying my bag and maybe gardening, usually fairly nonviolent activities, but I also...
You're a nonviolent gardener?
Generally, you know, if somebody were to press me and try to attack me, I'd feel a bit unsafe out there at night alone. I'm a woman, I'm not a fighter, and I feel better having a stick in my hand sometimes, but I have never used it in a violent manner. So he told me that I was trespassing and I'd have to leave, and I said, I am not doing anything, I'm just eating some cookies, you know, where can I go? He suggested that Denny's is open all night. Well, of course, fortunately I had enough money for a cup of coffee at Denny's. Had I not had any money for coffee, I could go hang out by Denny's. I did go to Denny's. There were some people hanging out by Denny's. Someone was being arrested. There were two police officers in cars there. Actually two cars, I think a few more officers. I have no idea what this person was doing wrong. All I saw that he was sitting out of the rain underneath the businesses next door, you know, overhang above the doors. And I just noticed that and thought it was interesting. The officer had suggested I go to Denny's, and then I see more officers. They're everywhere, you know.
He wanted you to party down.
I don't know. So I went into Denny's and had a cup of coffee. They have free refills, but I asked, is there a table minimum? Or they didn't say there was any time limit, but I only ordered coffee. She came and gave me one refill, and then she kind of ignored me. And so after I'd been sitting there reading and sipping my coffee slowly for maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, I decided my time was pretty well up at Denny's, and I'd better go somewhere else. So I left. And I met a nice Native American man outside who wanted to know, did I want to walk along with him? And I thought, sure, he was friendly, and I felt safe with him. And I ended up staying awake all night, sitting on the stairs of one of the local city buildings. I'm not going to name which one, but we weren't bothered. We weren't doing anyone any harm, but I didn't sleep. There really wasn't a place where I felt safe to sleep. And the next day, I was very exhausted.
Now, wait a minute. So in other words, Councilmember Mike Rotkin and Judge Tom Kelly are right. You don't have to sleep at night. You can sleep during the day.
Yeah, I ended up sleeping in the rain during the day because I was so tired the next day, and I became very upset. I was over by the Homeless Community Resource Center waiting for someone, and a man pulled up behind me. I was standing behind my friend's vehicle. I was not in a parking space, but I was standing on the street, and a man pulled up behind, and he could have stopped. He slowly inched forward until his bumper hit my leg, and that caught my attention. I was talking with my friend at the time, and I looked over, and I said, hey, you know, you might want to consider stopping, and he said something rude, I can't remember what, and I said, that's vehicular assault. He said, so call the cops. And I thought, well, you know, I'm certainly not going to bother the cops about a guy tapping me with his bumper, but this guy is an asshole. He's a jerk. He starts walking towards me, and I'm thinking, what, does he want to fight with me? I said, you want to fight with a woman? You know, I was ready to fight him if I had to defend myself, but I couldn't understand why this man intentionally wanted to hit me with his bumper. And I just, he walked away to go about his business, cussing me out for no apparent reason. And I just told him he was a poor excuse for a man, but my adrenaline started going, you know, it felt confrontational. I was really tired, and I just went over by a fence, and I laid down, and it's like I just had to walk away from that situation because I really didn't have the energy to deal with rude men that think, you know, tapping a woman on the leg with their bumper is an appropriate way to get her attention. And, you know, calling her names because she's standing near a place where poor people go to get breakfast, you know, is something appropriate to do to her either. And I just had it. I was like, this world is a man's world. There's no place for me in it. Nobody wants me anymore. Nobody even wants me to sit by their garbage. Okay? I don't want to be here anymore. And I went and tried to sleep, and a staff person from the shelter recognized me, and they were having a meeting, came over and suggested that I come out of the rain and underneath. There is an area where there's a covering over head. There's a picnic table, and during the daytime, people can't stay indoors at the shelter.